Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life!
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my 12th episode. My objective is to delve into the themes of horror, both real and imagined. Each episode will cover a movie in depth based on a theme of the month. After this episode, I'm finally done with the Be Careful What You Wish For theme. This theme has become a reality as the Cheeto in charge has taken office. Hispanic immigrants that voted for Trump should be feeling this one as legal pathways for immigration are being revoked and ICE targets people of color. I can personally speak on the hypocrisy of this because I'm half Puerto Rican, raised in a Cuban household, and I have a sister-in-law who's from Venezuela and just became an American citizen in December of 2024. So yeah, this really fucking sucks. I will be expressing my opinions on this podcast about current events as they seem fit. The most important thing here is be kind to others, be kind to yourself, and find ways to support each other, especially the marginalized groups right now that are being targeted, like our trans and our LGBTQ+ community. We will only get through these next 4 years by standing together and supporting each other. On that note, if you are new here, each episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I will get into the true crime of it all. I'm a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. Spoiler alert, I've made it my job to spoil the shit out of this movie. So, if you haven't seen the film and you plan on seeing it, but you don't like spoilers, then I would stop listening now. Or maybe you're kind of lukewarm on this movie or dead ass freezing cold on it. And you're listening to hear my analysis of it or whatever hot take I have, then continue listening. And then maybe you will change your opinion. Trigger warning for depictions of suicide. If you are struggling with thoughts of self-harm, call or text 988 for help. You are not alone. I know it's really hard for people right now, and there's a lot of despair, but take care of yourself, take care of your mental health, and if you can, take care of the people around you. So in today's episode, I'm covering Wish Upon, directed by John R. Leonetti, with writer Barbara Marshall, starring Joey King and Ryan Felipe and Ki Hong Lee. The film is loosely based on W.W. Jacobs' short story, The Monkey's Paw, from 1948. While most of the contents of the original drafts were seen in the final cut, there were alterations, a sequence where Carl almost gets hit by a truck, which referenced Billy Hitchcock's death in Final Destination, was removed as the filmmakers ultimately didn't want to make a Final Destination-esque product. I will tell them, before I even found this fact, all the kill scenes were very Final Destination-esque. I was already thinking the cinematography felt like Final Destination, the buildup of each scenario. So it had a budget of $12 million. And then it grossed about $23 million worldwide. This film's poor financial performance, as well as its so bad, its good reputation with both critics and audiences, contributed to the death of Broad Green Pictures, together with the poor performance of Just Getting Started. We've got a runtime of 1 hour and 30 minutes. Our tagline is Be Careful What You Wish For. This is my second movie with the same exact tagline. The other one was Wishmaster. There's also a decent amount of overlap in the teen horror genre going on here, so I will be comparing and contrasting this movie to The Craft, which I covered in last week's episode. Let's set the scene with the synopsis of the movie.
I can wish for anything. Money.
Get in! What is happening right now?
Love. Did that just
this happen?
There have been others who've had the box. They and everyone they loved all died. When the music ends, the blood price is paid. It's a demon.
What does it want?
Your soul.
On an otherwise ordinary day, a woman named Johanna Shannon goes to throw out something wrapped in a sheet as her daughter rides her bike with their dog Max. When Claire comes home, she finds her mother hanging in the attic. Teenage Claire wakes up from her reoccurring nightmare. As she rides her bike to school, she sees her uncle August, who her father doesn't want her speaking to. Distracted, Claire's almost struck by popular girl Darcy Chapman. When Claire gets to school, she sees her father dumpster diving with his friend Carl. She joins her friends June and Meredith. We see that Claire has a crush on popular guy Paul Middlebrook. Back home, Claire returns to see her father has found a large music box. Claire takes it inside and reads that the box will grant 7 wishes. The next day, Claire is at school with June and Meredith when they're giggling as Darcy and her clique of mean girls walk by. Darcy questions Claire as to why she's laughing, and Claire says that she called Darcy ultimate smegma, which is some kind of genital secretion in both males and females. Darcy smacks Claire, who smacks her back. Claire then gets knocked over, and she retaliates by tackling Darcy to the ground and engaging in a girl fight. When Claire goes home, she takes the music box and makes what she thinks is a hypothetical wish for Darcy to go rot. The following morning, Darcy wakes up to find parts of her hands, feet, and face looking grotesquely rotted. The news spread around the school that Darcy got necrosis from the spa, and that means Claire's wish has come true. At home, Claire goes to look for Max and finds his dead body under the deck of the house.
Buddy? You in there?
Her and her father, Barry, her childhood dog, after spending a good part of her day pining for Paul, Claire decides to make her second wish be that Paul would fall madly in love with her. When she goes to school again, Paul approaches her and shows clear interest, even in front of his girlfriend, Lola Sanchez. In Uncle August's home, the old man is preparing to take a bath. He fills his tub in water and steps in, only to clumsily slip and hit his head on the side of the tub. He regains consciousness, only to bang his head on the nozzle and die. Upon learning of August's death, Claire wonders to her father if August left his inheritance to anyone. Jonathan doubts he or Claire would have been mentioned. Considering that they aren't very financially stable at the moment, Claire goes to her room and tells the music box her third wish, which is that August had left them everything. Claire wakes up the next day to Jonathan telling her that August apparently left Claire his entire inheritance. The Shannons' former neighbor, Miss DeLuca, drops something down the garbage disposal and sticks her hand in to retrieve the item while precariously leaning close to the switch. Her ponytail goes down the disposal and she accidentally turns it on, causing the disposal to yank her hair and break her neck. Annoyed that her dad still goes dumpster diving for knickknacks, Claire uses her fourth wish for him to be less embarrassing. Her dad, Jonathan, then becomes a smooth saxophone player that Claire's friends find hot. Claire asks her friend, Ryan Hugh, for help in figuring out the phrase on the music box, as well as its history. They visit his cousin, Gina, and find that the box has been passed down for decades. But they can't translate the phrase. Gina sends the phrase to someone for an answer. That night, Gina is alone in her loft when she receives an email with the translation. She says it's messed up, and it starts to freak her out. In the darkness, she trips and falls face first into the horn of a bull statue. At school, Claire is now Paul's girlfriend. But all of his friends don't care to hang out with her, because Paul dumped Lola for her. Claire then wishes that she would become the most popular girl in school. In Paul's car, Claire realizes he is the person that's been stalking her. In response, she breaks things off with Paul. Ryan goes to check on Gina when he finds her dead in the loft. He tells Claire that he learned the phrase in the box translates to, "When the music ends, the blood price is paid." Later that day, Claire goes to Miss DeLuca's home and enters to a horrible smell. She then finds Miss DeLuca's dead body. Claire confides in June and Meredith about the box and how she's been making wishes. June encourages Claire to get rid of the box. Claire goes to do so, but finds it's much harder to let go of than she thought it would be. At a hotel, Claire admits to June that she didn't get rid of the box. Meredith then sets foot in an elevator to rejoin her friends. The elevator that Meredith is on drops and crashes to the bottom, killing Meredith. June blames Claire for Meredith's death. Ryan takes Claire to his house to show her his research. He reveals that he's learned more about the box's history. The very first owner cursed the box. All those who used it all ended up dead. At home, Claire struggles with the consequences of her wishes and the thought of undoing them. Eventually, the wishes are undone when the music box goes missing from where Claire had hidden it. In the midst of a breakdown, Claire finds out that June took the box from her room to try to get rid of it, but Claire takes it back, which results in her accidentally pushing June down the stairs in school. Ryan tries to stop her from making more wishes, but Claire can't be stopped. Devastated and in despair, Claire makes her sixth wish. She wishes that her mother never committed suicide. Seconds later, she hears her mother, Johanna's voice. Claire embraces her mom for the first time in years. The happiness is short-lived when Claire sees her dad outside under a tree with a chainsaw. She realizes that he will be the next one to pay the blood price for her wish.
Yeah, think so, man?
He is decapitated by the chainsaw, and in a panic, Claire finds the box in the attic with her mom's things. Claire screams at the box that she wants to use her last wish to go back to the day that her dad found the box. Claire wakes up on that fateful day. Max is in her bed. Claire asks her dad if she can join him and Carl as they go looking for things. Claire finds the box in a bin and wraps it in a sheet, taking it with her. When at school, Claire finds Ryan and gives him the box, saying how she knows Gina and that she can figure out what the box says and that they should get rid of it. As Claire walks off happily, Darcy accidentally hits her with her car, sending Claire's body flying several feet and crashing into a windshield. All the students look on in horror as Claire lays dead on the windshield of the other car. So now it's time to talk horror, and today I will be analyzing the film Solo. There are a lot of repeat tropes and that overlap with the narrative of this story and previous movies I've covered this month. I feel like this means I picked movies well because they couldn't be more on theme. So we start the movie out rough with a little Claire finding her mom hanging in the attic. This is a brutal scene, and she has long-lasting effects of this trauma throughout the film. It's also made clear that the once hot sax dad is now a dumpster diving dad. If it wasn't for losing his wife, our father figure, Ryan Felipe, he would have been the hot sax dad the whole time. But fortunately, he becomes a dumpster diving, embarrassing dad. And that's really sad because he's really hot and they did him wrong in this movie. But he does a good job playing the part. I don't know. He's kind of a deadpan character. But he's supposed to be that way, I think, because that's the whole, like, I'm a struggling dad on my own with this teenage daughter. Don't know what to do. Trying my best, but also dumpster diving at the same time. Poor Claire even has to deal with it, like, literally in front of her school. So we have the setup of our main protagonist having, like, having a troubled upbringing and a lot of things to wish for. Look, she's missing a lot of things in her life that haven't been fulfilled. Suddenly having seven wishes for this teenage girl, it's going to be trouble. She's not going to know what to do with it. She's just going to be super selfish. And what are the implications of these wishes? And how do they compare to, like, other movies I covered already this month? All right. And our antagonist is Darcy Chapman, who tortures and targets Claire for seemingly no reason. The scene in the cafeteria was wild because Darcy just goes up to her and starts, like, antagonizing her while she's laughing. And I do hear Claire say, like, this smigma thing, but it's, like, very faint. And the fact that Darcy actually walks over to her and is confronting her in such an aggressive way. Claire she's a victim of bullying here, but she does something that's not expected, at least not in those situations. So instead of just sitting and taking it, she stands up. She tells her exactly what she says. She tells her what it means. And then she defends herself whenever Darcy hits her. And that's where we land on our first wish. So because of this horrible bitch hurting our main character, Claire, we've got our first wish out of anger. And she wishes that Darcy would go rot. This whole scenario is parallel to The Craft when Rochelle puts a spell for something to happen to Laura Lizzie if she doesn't leave her alone. Lizzie's hair falls out when she continues to taunt Rochelle. And in Wish Upon, Darcy develops necrotizing fasciitis. Pretty metal way to get back at your enemy. The first blood toll here is for her poor dog, Max, that her mother gave to her. This was her last connection to her mom, and she loses her dog. So let's move on to the second wish. I'm just going to kind of go through the tropes and the wishes one by one and compare and contrast. So our second wish, we have the love spell gone wrong. Claire has it bad for Paul, who is part of the group that torments her. Funny story, I'm going to put in here really quick. In high school, I never fell for one of these guys, but I was in photography class, and one of the biggest, like, jocks in my school was also in my class, and we had an assignment to do portraits. I convinced him to do drag portraits for me, and I even had him smoking cigarettes and everything in them. I don't know how the fuck I got away with that in school. I dressed him up. I put lipstick on him. He let me do it, and he was happy to do it. I really hope that he's a drag queen now, because he fucking pulled that shit off. And that was my experience with jocks in high school. I never wanted to fuck them. I just wanted to make them drag. So let's get back to this. She has it bad for this jock dude. And of course, every time you put a love spell on someone, it's going to go wrong. Something is going to, it's going to go to an extreme that no one wants it to go to. And no one should be obsessed with anyone else. You should love each other, respect each other, but obsession at this level of a love, what a love spell would do, is unhealthy. This parallels to Sarah's love spell on Chris in The Craft. And both go horribly wrong, with Paul stalking Claire and taking pictures of her while she's sleeping from outside her bedroom. When she breaks up with him, he attempts suicide, like extreme stuff. In The Craft, Chris tries to rape Sarah, and later Nancy confronts Chris when he is pushed out the third story balcony, where he falls to his death. So both have really bad endings, and I say the moral to this story is have a balanced relationship. The blood toll for this one is her uncle August. Then we've got our third wish. So Claire finds out that her uncle's dead, and she's really curious about the inheritance, which I would be too. So I think this is her first wish that isn't as self-serving. It serves her father as well. In her third wish, she wishes that August had left her everything. And then when she wakes up, she is told that apparently she was left the entire inheritance. So we've got our third wish. If you ask me, a better way to use this wish would have been for her dad to get like some really high paying job where he's constantly getting money instead of like a one big chunk of money. That money will eventually go away. So if you ever get these kinds of wishes, make sure that you're being smart with your wishes, that you're thinking long-term investment in these wishes. Okay. So we don't want one big inheritance. We want something that's going to accumulate or be able to give some revenue. So think about that when you get your wishes. So this is another parallel to The Craft. When Nancy's stepfather dies and her mother are left with a decent inheritance, not a great inheritance, but a decent inheritance. And so we've got our blood toll here is her neighbor, Miss DeLuca, which is very sad because Miss DeLuca is obviously a mother figure. All right, wish number four. So in her fourth wish, she gets really selfish again, and she wishes that her dad would stop dumpster diving, which I totally get. I mean, you came into all this money, you have a sizable inheritance, and your dad is still digging in the trash. And people are posting about it. People know that that's her dad, and they're using it against her. So I feel for her here. But she makes a really broad wish, saying that she wishes her dad would stop being embarrassing, which who knows what that means. But, well, we find out what that means. That means that her dad is going to be a hot sax dad who's playing that saxophone like he is the saxophone player, the hot sax man from The Lost Boys, Tim Capello, who, like, side note, my husband has booked him. And he's a really nice guy and still looks sure in extremely good shape. So just so you know. So this also was reminiscent of the dynamic between Nancy and her mother. The money didn't fix everything. Money doesn't take away their problems. Even though in The Craft, Nancy gets the inheritance, they're still unhappy. She's still angry. Her mom's lonely. And so when it comes to Claire and her dad, again, money didn't fix everything. He's still dumpster diving. He still has trauma that he's trying to process. I find that those two storylines are, again, for the second time, like intersecting. They have similarities. So the blood toll for this one is Gina, the cousin of the potential love interest that helped with the translation. And she has a very Final Destination style death. Our fifth wish. Even though Claire is now Paul's girlfriend, His group still shuns her. They want nothing to do with her. She's not a cool girl. They don't even understand, like, why he likes her. And this is kind of contrary to what we see in other movies, especially other, like, teen movies. I'm thinking of, like, She's All That and all those kinds of movies where the popular guy decides he's going to pick the dork girl, and then everyone's going to see how amazing she is, and they're going to embrace her. But that doesn't happen here. So what happens here is she's still an outcast. So she really wants to be popular. So she decides that her next wish is going to be the most popular girl in school. And here lies our vanity wish that parallels Bonnie's spell for her to become beautiful inside and out. Bonnie is not selfish. It's a different level. Like, Bonnie has legit reasons to make a vanity wish. But nevertheless, it's still a vanity wish, whether it is justified or not. So Claire's vanity wish is not justified. She becomes the most popular girl in school. And I really like how her friends are not fooled. They're like, they're on to her. They're like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, not that they're not supportive friends, but they're also like, their best friend radar is like going off. So the blood toll is Meredith. She goes inside the elevator and the elevator crashes again. Very Final Destination in the way that this kill scene plays out. So we've got our sixth wish that comes after June took the box and undid all of her wishes. So Claire is now back at square one, but not just back at square one. She's back. She's worse off than she had ever been before. This has put her in a desperate need because not only does she not have all the things that she's wished for, but all these people she cares about and she loves are now dead because of it. And now it was all for nothing. So she freaks out. She's in the middle of a breakdown and she goes and things just go from bad to worse. In the midst of her breakdown, she gets into a tug of war with the box and June falls down the stairs. I don't think she's hurt. She seemed to have fallen very gracefully, sliding down on her belly. Maybe if we had seen her after this scene, maybe she would be in a full body cast or something like that, like ridiculous. Claire decides to go big or go home. So she uses her sixth wish and she wishes that her mother never committed suicide. I don't really have a direct comparison to this wish in The Craft, but I will say that Sarah from The Craft has an experience with her deceased mother's picture coming to life. And in this one, the death toll is trading one parent's life for the other. So mom's alive, but now dad's going to be decapitated by a chainsaw. So she goes to find the box. She sees that her mom had painted a picture of the box, and then she starts blaming everything on her mother. And it was almost like generational trauma theme, like her mom did it, now she did it. The destiny of this box has landed itself in this family's lap. They can't get away from it. She is going to be the one that breaks the curse on the family, I guess. And her seventh wish is going to be that giant reset button. And for this wish, I'm going to compare it to Wishmaster, because at the end of Wishmaster, the main character, Alex, she wishes that the guy working the crane on the docks was never drinking that day. They delivered the statue. When Ahura Mazda is delivered, it never breaks. The whole thing never happens. Everyone's brought back. Voila. Same thing here. She wants to go back to the day that her dad found the box. So we have our giant reset button with the final wish. And at the end, the main character sets everything back to the way it was. Claire gets her moral standing back in this. In these final scenes, it really reminded me of someone about to commit suicide. And when I say that, I'm not trying to be insensitive. I'm saying that because it really did remind me of when people are like, I can't believe that person was so happy and they ended their life that day. They seemed the happiest they'd ever been. They were doing so great. They were like all these things. But we know that when someone has decided to take their lives, a lot of times they will seem very happy at that final day. And this is because a lot of times it's because they've made a final decision on something that has been painstakingly torturing them for so long. The end makes it seem like she is a martyr when she trades her life for the life of the others. But is she really a martyr? Or did she just realize she's fucked and was going to die no matter what at this point? So she decided to make a wish that would redeem her from her previous selfish behavior. There's also a dark irony paralleled at the beginning and the end of the movie. So in the beginning, Claire wishes that Darcy would go rot and she gets necrosis. And then at the end, her wish isn't to affect Darcy, but her last wish ends up affecting Darcy by Darcy killing her, hitting her with a car, which is most likely going to destroy Darcy's reputation. And it's going to be like a huge trauma for her as well, that she just murdered someone, accidentally or not. I had a few little notes in here before I finish up my analysis. Miss DeLuca, the neighbor, she is very motherly. I really love how they included this in the dialogue. She asks if Claire likes a him or her. And a lot of people, I think even still, you know, we've got our political climate going on right now and it's really fucked. But this specific scene with the two of them really reminded me of me and my daughter, because she, for the longest time, would not show interest in anyone. And I'm like, that's fine. If you want to be like no one, if you want to just be you and be like asexual or something, like I'm cool. I'm fine with that. Less problems for me, right? But as she was getting older, I'm like, okay, do you like this person or that celebrity? Or, and I'd always ask, do you like her or do you like him? And I would show pictures of different celebrities and say, do you have a crush on this celebrity? And it'd be a picture of some singer, a female singer. And then I'd show a picture of like a male singer. And she'd be like, no, I don't have a crush on any of those people. I don't have a crush on anyone. The point of the story is that you want to support your child no matter what. And so making that part of the dialogue that, you know, they can like anyone and it doesn't matter, and making it just a normal conversation. It's not even weird. She didn't even find it weird. I'm very supportive of the LGBTQ plus community. And my daughter's always known that. And she didn't find it weird at all. That phrase meant a lot because it's recognizing more than one point of view. And it's giving that person a space and a place to feel comfortable no matter where they're coming from. That's basically what I'm trying to say here. I really enjoyed that that was in the movie. I'm going to stop ranting about it now. I hope that you guys also appreciate that little bit.
And everyone they loved all died.
When the music ends, the blood price is paid.
It's a demon.
What does it want?
Your soul.
All right, now it's time for the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. So this film is loosely based on W.W. Jacobs' short story, The Monkey's Paw, from 1948. I say loosely because the amount of wishes is different. In the original story, there are only 3 wishes, and in Wish Upon, we've got a whole 7 wishes. Very greedy with these wishes. And she pays the ultimate price for it. The monkey's paw serves as a symbol of the dangers of meddling with fate and the consequences of greed. It represents the desire of power and control over one's destiny and the danger that comes with trying to manipulate the unknown. The paw's ability to grant wishes is ultimately shown to be a curse, as the consequences of the wishes become increasingly dire and destructive. The theme of grief is central to The Monkey Paw, which we also have a lot of grief when it comes to the movie Wish Upon. He also shows the profound impact of grief on the human psyche, as the characters become increasingly consumed by their own pain and desperation. Through his portrayal of grief, Jacobs reminds us of the importance of acceptance and moving forward, even in the face of loss and tragedy. So I was curious as to where the superstition of the monkey's paw originated from. Like, was there something related to a god, or was there something that someone believed happened, like some kind of superstition around this, that it's not just a kid's story? Maybe it started, it had to start somewhere, right? I was able to find a little bit more information about stories that came before Monkey's Paw. So there's 1001 Arabian Nights collection of stories called The Three Wishes, or The Man Who Longed to See the Night of Power. In it, the man is blessed by Allah with three prayers guaranteed to come true. Following the advice of his wife, his first wish is to have a bigger penis. You heard that. His wife wanted him to have a bigger penis. She wasn't satisfied. He was like, okay, cool, honey. I'm going to do that. I am going to wish for a bigger penis. But when he makes this wish, he doesn't just get a bigger penis. He gets a giant penis. A penis that would scare any housewife. A penis that is more akin to the giant worm from the horror movie Tremors than anything you could take pleasure in. So, obviously, not cool, not gonna fly, can't have that. So, she makes him wish to get rid of his monster penis. But once again, he wasn't specific enough. So, he ends up looking like a Ken doll. That also would not do. So, his third wish is to have his penis back to exactly how it was before. So, we've got that giant reset button with that third wish. The last line of the tale is that the man lost his three wishes by the lack of wit in the woman. They always blame it on the woman, even though he's the one who chose how he phrased those wishes, and he could have been a lot more specific about the kind of penis he wanted. He is lacking in the penis department to begin with, and then he's also lacking in his ability to make a decent wish. I'm sure he makes it work. I'm sure she's happy. But if you had all of those wishes and then they were just, I just don't know. Okay? I don't know. There are versions where the man is blamed for the poor phrasing of wishes. In a Swedish version called The Sausage, but this was a real sausage, you guys. It's not a metaphor for a penis. It's a sausage. A woman is granted three wishes by a divine stranger, and she uses the first one to wish for a big, fat sausage. You heard that. A sausage link the size of a small child. Okay, so we've got this huge sausage. This is food. She wants to feed her husband this sausage. And when he comes home from work, She finds out that she wasted one of the wishes on a fucking sausage. Like, you could have anything you want. And you ask for a fucking sausage. You ask for a sausage. Mad, he wishes for the sausage to be stuck to her nose. So now he's got an elephant wife with a sausage nose. With a long sausage nose. It's like a limp Pinocchio. Like, that's not smart either. This is a really bad couple. She at least was thoughtful. She's like, I want to feed you. And he's like, he's an abusive husband. He's like, you're going to wear that sausage because you wasted this wish. So you're going to wear it. When they can't remove it, they are forced to use the third wish to make it disappear. So setting them again, we're set back. We got that reset button. And it's as if the wishes had never come to them to begin with. All these scenarios are not good. Maybe someone can make it work, but so far, not so good. Let's end on a high note. If you would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene. I'm also thinking about making mini episodes called Horror Highlights, where people email me with movies that could fit into my theme of the month, but I am not covering. This is a way to categorize horror movies and maybe find something new. You can email me your movie suggestions to screamqueenpodcaster@gmail.com. Some horror-related events happening near me. I'm looking forward to MegaCon coming to Orlando February 6th through the 9th. I have a 4-day pass, and I'm looking forward to cosplaying Pearl, Elvira, and maybe creating my own Cenobite. I'll be attending the Indie Horror Junkie Film Festival that's happening Friday through Sunday. Indie horror movies that will be screening are Screamboat, The Inn, and Mutilator 2. There's also going to be, after the screenings, there's going to be a Q&A section with a panel of producers and cast members from each movie. So I'm excited to listen in on that and maybe ask some questions. I'm going to start shouting out people who leave 5-star reviews. So someone under the username Pop Reflect said, Jenica brings her passion to this insightful and entertaining podcast. I highly recommend this show for horror fans, film fans, and podcast listeners alike. Great show and a new weekly listen for me. Thank you. Like, seriously, thank you. Whoever you are under the username Pop Reflect, it really means a lot to me, and I appreciate you, for real. No false, like, I'm not being Ariana Grande on my press tour right now, being all like, oh my God. But I really do appreciate you. Thank you. It makes a difference. Like, leaving these reviews and all this stuff makes a difference. So on Spotify, I have Jeremy. I'm just going to say Jeremy. I don't know if he wants me to say his whole name. So Jeremy says, I absolutely love how you couldn't care less about the orange skin fellas out there. I absolutely love how you couldn't care less about the orange skin fellas followers. You're very right, Jeremy. I couldn't care less about the opinions of those who choose to follow a man like he who shall not be named. There is pressure to keep politics out of my podcast, and I'm not planning on going off the rails and bringing up current events all the time, but where it seems fit, I'm going to put it. I will continue to speak out for those who need support. Horror has always been political, and horror has always been a political and social commentary on the times. In the most tasteful way I can, I will say, you don't become a final girl by staying quiet. So we have another one. Janice 6 left a comment saying, enjoyed my first horror trivia last night at Conduit, and then gave their team name. I'm not going to give it out loud, but they came to my trivia horror event that I host once a month. So thank you for being part of my Scream team and attending my last event. And you also followed up by actually listening to my podcast and leaving comments. So fucking thank you so much. Like, it means a lot to me. You're really helping a Scream Queen out. And yeah, I appreciate you. I really hope I see you again. I'll probably like give you a little something extra next time, just because you deserve it. This is a weekly podcast with new episodes out every Thursday. All the research, writing, and audio is done by yours truly. This is a one-woman show, and I'm doing my very best. I have a monthly horror event at Conduit in Orlando, Florida. My next event is going to be February 12th, and it's going to be like a Valentine-themed bride type of, it's going to be like a love theme, but it's horror love, brides. If you come, I'm really hoping to have a full room of undead brides. I'm going to be covering Bride of Frankenstein, Bride of Reanimator, and Bride of Chucky. So those are the movies I'm going to base my event off of. And it's going to be a lovely bridal party. We're going to be a bunch of brides just hanging out and having drinks and doing trivia and talking horror. And nothing sounds better than wearing the white dress and gorging on bloody drinks and men's energy, or whatever we want to call it. Okay, that's where I'm going to put it. That's where I'm leaving it. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook. I have Blue Sky. I have all those things. I also have a link tree. I'm most active on Instagram and Blue Sky. The other things, like, I really don't pay any attention to. So if you follow me on those places, you're not going to be updated, really. We have our theme of threes to help support yours truly. These three rituals will help me spread the good word of horror. So please rate, review, and subscribe. These rituals only work if you do all three things. So please do so and do it often. Remember, be careful what you wish for. Until next time, goodbye.